you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
That's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems. The biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need. How prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio. You are listening to Jim...
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the live broadcast. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. We've got a really great program lined up for you. Tonight, I would say, is going to be a very practical program. And you know, on occasion, I like to I like to go off in different directions and talk about aliens and talk about politics and transhumanism and all kinds of unusual topics that amuse me. But tonight we're going to get down to brass tacks, very much the kind of radio show that I used to do when I first got into radio many, many years ago. We're going to be doing sort of an at-your-service type of program in just a few minutes. My guest will be Sandy Botkin, and Sandy is the author of Lower Your Taxes Big Time. And I know we're looking at about 3 weeks here to when the tax returns are officially due. Some of you have already filed, and that's okay. Some of you haven't, and you've got questions leading up to tax time. But really more than that, more than this being about how can we answer last-minute tax questions, which we certainly can do that, this is about how can we sort of set you up for a better year this year. How can you lower your taxes this year going forward? So we're going to be getting into all that, home-based businesses, all the tax write-offs you can get for a home office, things that you may have heard about but didn't really know how to implement in your own personal situation. Well, I had an interesting week this week. Yesterday, a lot of fun. We played the Moonlighters Big Band that I play with. It's an 18-piece big band, sort of in the tradition of Glenn Miller. And I play trumpet with the band, and we had a show last night in Orange City, which is a little town just outside of Orlando. We did a fundraiser for a girls' orphanage. Actually, it's a girls' school. I don't know that it's officially an orphanage, but it's in Haiti. And the band has been doing this now. I believe this was our fifth year that we do this, and it was a lot of fun at a church there in their all-purpose room. Fellowship Hall, if you will. I know we have all these different terms that we use. And what we did was a two-hour show, and people were able to dance, those that were so inclined. And a good time was had by all, and really nice folks. They make all kinds of desserts and sandwiches and all kinds of little snacks to put on the table. They made their own kettle corn, if you can believe it or not, but that was last night. So I was a little bit tired, you know, yesterday, you know, playing a big show with the big band, you know, that's always exhausting and everything. And then this morning, you know, our church, we're involved in a Sunday school class that's running right now. So we had to be at the church an hour early. And then we were also volunteers this week. Once every 4 weeks we do that. We're volunteers for the kids program. And so we worked with a group this morning of ranging from age 3 to 5. And I don't know what it is about being around kids that age. I'm drained. I'm riding home from church with my wife, and we were both so hungry. We said, "Hey, let's stop and get something." So we stopped and got a little bit of something to eat at a fast food place. And I looked over at her and I said, "I'm about to fall asleep at the wheel." I mean, it's like, you know, 12:30, 12:45, and I said, "Let's just try to get home." So we needed to make a stop and get a couple of grocery items. We did, and I went home, got home, and had a glorious Sunday nap. I think I slept from like 1 to 3. And I always enjoy that on Sundays, taking a nap. But then you wake up, and the rest of the day is just not quite the same. You just feel like, I don't know, sometimes I feel that headache you get when you sleep too much, or my sinuses start acting up. So, but anyway, beautiful weather here in Florida. We're enjoying this time of year, and it's going to be great this week, because on Tuesday, my wife Ann and I, we're going to be sailing the sailboat up to St. Augustine. It's about a 3 to 4 hour ride in our sailboat from Palm Coast to St. Augustine. And that's depending on winds and all that. Of course, I do have a motor, but it's a sailboat, so we can and will put the sail up on part of the journey. And if we benefit from some wind speed, that will help us get there a little bit more quickly. But the purpose of this journey is very utilitarian. We're not just sailing up to St. Augustine because it's a lot of fun to do that, which it will be. This is actually our every 2 year appointment with the boatyard. And when you own a sailboat, you have to put paint on the bottom of it. This is special paint that has a chemical in it that keeps barnacles from growing on the bottom of your boat. So in addition to having a diver that comes down to my dock about once a month and dives under my boat and cleans all that stuff off, I've got to have this special paint on there. And the paint does wear off after about 2 years, 2 years to 2.5 years. So we're right at that point in time, and as it gets warmer, as it is, the bottom growth will get worse. So the diver says it's got to be repainted before the warm weather hits. My wife is off school this week as a teacher. She's on spring break. So we sail the boat on Tuesday to St. Augustine, and the plan is to sail it back probably on Thursday, maybe on Friday. But it's a lot of fun to be on the boat. And, you know, of all the cities in the world, I just love St. Augustine, and I probably enjoy the approach by the water even more than I do coming into town by car. I mean, it's just such a beautiful approach coming in to the Matanzas Bay, looking at the fort there and the skyline of St. Augustine from the perspective of a sailboat. A really, really, really neat experience. And St. Augustine, by the way, is really busy these days, about 30 minutes from my house, and we spend a lot of time up there, but hustling and bustling up there, literally almost elbow to elbow, as they are getting ready to celebrate this next year their 450th anniversary, which makes them the nation's oldest city. And surprising how many people come down to Disney World and never take the hour and a half, 2 hour journey to get over to St. Augustine. But something to think about if you're planning a summer vacation coming down to Orlando, to get a, if you get a chance to get a day trip in. It's just a, you know, couple hours drive from Disney. There's lots of great things to do. You could be back, you know, in bed at your hotel at Disney that night. Augustine. And literally, while you're up there, you'll hear people speaking in all different dialects from all around the world. It is a worldwide destination, and very, very European in style. Well, I usually start the show by talking about what's going on my Twitter feed, and I'm not going to talk about my Twitter feed this week, because I've been spending more time this week focusing on Facebook, and I'm a little bit different than a lot of the media people out there. I actually have a personal page, and I also have a Facebook page for ChristianMoney.com. You know, I'm Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, but at the same time, I do have quite a bit of people that follow me on Facebook, and we actually, you know, we're actually accepting friends personally, I am, on my Facebook page. So if you want to just become a personal friend and get both some business news and personal news, you can go over to facebook.com/JamesLParis and just friend me personally, and that's a lot of fun. And then we also have the business page set up for christianmoney.com, which is a little bit more business-oriented. You won't get much by way of personal updates on me if you're looking more just strictly for you know, business and money saving, money making, avoiding scams, all that good information. You can get there by going to facebook.com/JamesLParis and then the number 1. So it's /JamesLParis for the personal page, /JamesLParis, the number 1 for the business page. But interesting discussion that erupted on my Facebook page this week. Ann and I were out to dinner on Friday night, and after dinner, it was about 8:30. It was still an early night, and we were passing by a bookstore, a Barnes & Noble. And I said to Ann, hey, would you like to stop? Maybe we can get a cup of coffee or something. And she said, sure. It was still early. It was only 8:30. So we went in there and went right to the coffee bar, got a couple of coffees, and got a cookie. So we spent, I think, $5 or $6. And we both took about a half hour or 40 minutes browsing. Ann ended up buying a handful of books from the bargain section. So we spent some money in there. But I sort of had a moral dilemma, and it was that I found a book I wanted to buy. The book was on social media, and it was a paperback book, and it looked like a really good book. I paged through it, had lots of good information in it, and I looked at I turned it over, and it was $26. And I don't know if it's just me, if I'm missing something. When did paperback books go to almost $30? I mean, I remember when you could get a paperback book for like $10 or $15, and now they're almost at $30. I sound like an old man when I talk like this. Like, you know, I remember back in the day when you could get a shave and a haircut for $2. Please tell me that paperback books are not $30 now, like how-to business-type books. But so here I was, I'm holding this book in my hand, and I want to buy it. I'd love to walk out with it that night and start reading it. Have it for the weekend, and it's $28, and I'm, you know, I'm looking at, well, it's $26 actually, but then when I add the tax and all of that nonsense in, it would have been like $28, $29. So there I was with my smartphone, and I, you know, go to Amazon, and I put the name of the book in, and it pops up for $18, free shipping because I'm an Amazon Prime member, and no sales tax. So I'm looking at a savings of $10 on this book. And I decided I'm going to save the $10. And I ordered it online, and I'll get it. I think I'll get it on Monday, maybe Tuesday, which is fine. And so I posted my story up on my personal Facebook page. So facebook.com/JamesLParis. Lots of people commenting on this. Lots of people weighing in. Some people think that it was wrong what I did to go into a bookstore, use the bookstore to basically browse and page through their books and then buy the book online. And I sort of, you know, I kind of halfway feel horrible about doing that. But on the other hand, you know, why don't local bookstores price their books more competitively or something? I mean, that to me is too big of a price difference when you're looking at $28 to buy it in the bookstore or $18 to get it online. I mean, that's just too big of a difference for me to ignore that. But to make a long story short, we did spend money in there. I think we ended up spending $30 in there between the coffees and the cookie and the books my wife bought from the bargain section. So it wasn't like we went in there and ripped off the bookstore, but it was very interesting, the give and take on my Facebook page. This is on the personal Facebook page. People kind of arguing both sides of this. In other news, one story that caught my eye, and I don't know if you have been following this, but flood insurance, there are a lot of weird things going on with flood insurance. But let me start by saying this. There are people that live in these high-risk flood zones, and every year or two, their house is completely flooded, and they put in these claims for flood insurance with their flood insurance carrier, which, by the way, all flood insurance comes from the U.S. government. Now, you can buy it through your local insurance, but the actual insurance is coming from the government. And this is a loser for the government. The government pays out way more than they ever collect. So what's been going on is, for years, you'd see these people right on the Mississippi River in many cases, many of these communities, some of them, you know, below sea level. You know, I mean, look at New Orleans. It's actually below sea level. And your heart breaks when you see these whole towns flooded. But when you see these towns flooded over and over and over again, you just ask the question, well, at what point would you move out of a town that floods every, you know, handful of years or less? And so what's been happening is some major changes in how the government prices flood insurance. And how they're pricing it is based on the actual risk of flooding. Imagine that. So some really bizarre things are going on where people who owned a small home in one of these communities that has historically a high risk of flooding, and maybe they paid, you know, $300-$500 a year for insurance, they're now getting hit in some cases with bills for insurance, for flood insurance, that are tens of thousands of dollars. And so here's what's happening is, not only can these people not afford to pay the insurance, and their bank is requiring them to have it. So if they have a mortgage, they've got to have this flood insurance. And if they don't buy the flood insurance, then the bank will buy the flood insurance and then, in essence, put them into foreclosure. So a lot of these people are saying, well, I can't afford to live in this house anymore based on the current cost of flood insurance. So they decide, hey, I'm just going to sell. But guess what? They can't sell their house because anybody coming in to buy a house, number one, is going to learn that this is a high-risk flood zone, and they probably don't want to buy a house in a high-risk flood zone. Number two, who wants to buy a house where you know that you've got tens of thousands of dollars a year added to your cost for mandatory flood insurance policy that you're going to have to get? So what this has done is absolutely crushed the value of homes in these communities, and there's a lot of discussion about this, and there's a likelihood that the government's probably going to go back to the good old days, if you will, of the cheap flood insurance, because here's what's happening. These people are walking away from their houses, and the banks are stuck with these houses that nobody will buy, and they've just got to eat it. Got to eat the loss on these houses. And what this is likely to do, many people believe, is to start creating ghost towns all across the country, especially, you know, in places where we historically have high risks of flood. So I'm throwing that out tonight. I'll probably post this up on Facebook a little bit later. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, should the government be providing insurance and, you know, losing money on that? I mean, which is what they've historically done. Should we go back to that, or should we keep things the way that it is and end up, in essence, closing down these towns and turning them into ghost towns? Or maybe you would say, look, this is just common sense. If you live in a community where it floods every handful of years or less, probably we need to close down that community and relocate people. Should the government have some kind of program to get people out of these situations so that they can buy another home elsewhere? I mean, who knows? These are all good questions. We're sort of in uncharted territory, but you know, flooding, it's something that I know a lot of people say, oh, there's more floods today than ever. You know, maybe there is, but I don't think that the flooding itself is happening more frequently. I think what's happening is that people are getting more and more bold about building in these flood-prone areas. That's really what's happened. It, you know, 200 years ago, it probably still flooded in these same areas, but there weren't, you know, housing developments there, so it wasn't really a big deal. But this is really a question nobody knows the answer to, and where we go with this. So tonight we're going to be talking about your taxes, and we're going to be taking your phone calls as well in just a few minutes. So write down the toll-free number. It is 888-287-3316. 888-287-3316. And we want to welcome for the first time to Jim Paris Live our special guest. His name is Sandy Botkin. He's author of a number of books, including lower your taxes big time, achieve financial freedom big time, real estate tax secrets of the rich. She's got a huge resume here, which we won't have time to go through, but I'm sure you've heard of him. He was formerly an IRS guy, just an all-around tax expert, and one of the few guys on taxes that he actually makes sense. Like, when you hear him on a radio show or see him on TV, you actually understand what he says, and that's why we invited him to be with us tonight. Sandy Botkin, welcome to Jim Paris Live.
It's a pleasure. By the way, your last conversation of flood insurance was interesting, because when I wrote my book, Achieve Financial Freedom Big Time, one of the things I mention is normal property insurance does not cover floods, and people have to deal with that separately.
You know, that is such a good point, and I can tell you this, that if you were to walk down the street and interview 100 people, 90 of them would not know that, what you just said.
That's correct. That is correct.
It is scary when you see these floods and you see the news cameras out there and people talking about, well, I think my homeowners will pay off on this. No. And so
no,
it's really
correct.
Important for people to know that. Well, can I call you Sandy? We'll start with
Sandy's
that.
Sandy's fine.
All right, sir. Let's start with, I know we've got, about 3 weeks here to April 15th, so let's go through the rundown for the guy or gal who's listening. They're not quite ready to file yet, so talk a little bit about how to get the extension of time and how that works and how much time you get, and does that also include extra time to pay if you don't have the money?
That's a good point. First of all, let me emphasize one thing. And I go on all these shows, and they always ask me, we got so many weeks left, what can we do now? The best time to do tax planning, without question, is not now. The best time to do it is before December 31st, because that's when you can do lots and lots of things. I wrote a whole book called Lower Your Taxes Big Time, and 96% of it applies before December 31st. Once the year comes to the end, there are things you can do, and I'll get into a few of those things, but it's much more limited. So I want to make that very clear.
You're 100% right on that, and I'm going to spend most of our time with you tonight getting into those kind of pre-planning types of things.
Good, because that's really what people need to know. And the second thing is tax planning is a year-round endeavor. It's not one of these things you go from January to April, or you say, I just heard this radio show, let's do it for 2 weeks. This is a year-round endeavor. This is something you meet with your accountant, and you action every couple weeks, you start implementing new things, and you read up about it, and so on. This is just an important thing. But people don't realize how important this is, in fact. You know, it's funny, Susie Orman, you probably heard of Susie Orman, as famous as she is, and she talks about how getting out of debt is so important, and that's true. And she says debt's the number one expense in this country, and many people need to get out of it. And as famous as she is, she's partially wrong. The number one expense in this country is taxes. It exceeds what you pay for food, clothing, housing, and transportation combined. And people
And Sandy, we have such a strange tax system where it's, in essence, on the honor system for most people. Most people will never be audited, and yet we walk around in such fear of being audited that many of my friends, for example, who would be entitled to a home office deduction are afraid to take it. They say, but if you'll be audited.
There are so many myths about the tax law, it's unbelievable. And I'm going to talk about the home office in particular, by the way. But, you know, there have been some studies. And what I have found in my 30 years of lecturing on tax is the fact, and financial areas, is that most people, especially self-employed people, overpay their taxes. And I'm not the only one saying this. John Potter of the AICPA just recently said Americans are overpaying their taxes. The General Accounting Office says Americans on a whole are overpaying their taxes by the tune of at least $1 billion. People are overpaying their taxes, and there's three reasons for that. Reason one is lack of knowledge. You don't know what you don't know. The second reason is procrastination. If you don't have something triggering you to do the certain things for the documentation, like an auto log or entertainment questions or travel questions or charity or whatever it is you need to keep track of, you don't do it. It's kind of like an alarm clock. If you don't set your clock, you don't wake up. Same thing is true in taxes. And the third reason is fear of the IRS. And that's the dumbest of the three, because if you know what you're doing and your documentation is right, there's nothing that they'll do to you. It's sort of like being on a highway. When you see a patrolman with a radar gun, if you're going within the speed limit, chances are nothing's going to happen. It's only when you're speeding do they pull you over. And the same thing is true in tax law. If you know what you're doing, you can actually increase your deductions and reduce your chance of audit at the same time, as strange as that sounds. And let's take a good example. You talked about the home office deduction. Everybody thinks, oh, a home office, oh, it's not worth it. I'm going to be audited. I'm not going to take it because I'm afraid of the IRS. Here's an interesting point. I don't know if you knew this, but a friend of mine did a study. And he found that people who claim the home office versus the people who don't claim the home office have about the same chance of being audited. Same chance. So my problem is, or the point is, if you have about the same chance of being audited and you're eligible, why not take it? And more importantly, in 1999, Congress liberalized the home office rules and made it easier. Why would Congress do that if they didn't want you to claim a home office deduction? Think about that.
Now, I would be a terrible lawyer because I let you skip one of the questions before I went back to it. And so my producer's saying, hey, go back to that first question. Let's go back to that. The first question about we've got 3 weeks left, filing extensions of time. How much more time do you get? Do you get more time to pay? That sort of stuff.
Let's
before we
that.
Get
okay.
any new stuff.
Okay, let's deal with that. First of all, there are some things you can still do and the things you want to watch. But one of the things you can still do is, as long as you have either a pension or an IRA in existence, you can make a contribution to it and get a deduction for it for last year's taxes. That's true for the IRA. That's true for the 401k that's in existence, anything in existence. You have to do it before April 15th, but it is in existence. It's number two. When you get an extension, and which, by the way, you can file and get a six-month extension, be aware of that, to file your tax return, that extension only extends, as you wisely noted, the right to file the return later on. It does not extend the time to pay. You still have to somehow figure out with your accountant how much you're going to owe, and if you owe money, you need to file it with the extension. If you don't do that, there's a 5% per month late payment penalty for the money that should have been paid on April 15th, even though you filed an extension.
So now, what would you say are the biggest mistakes that people make that could trigger an audit? You know, they have like this list of top dumb things, like you don't sign the return and it gets sent back. What are like some of the no-brainer things that people should be aware of that they could be doing and end up in an audit for no good reason than just doing one of these dumb things?
Well, obviously, failing to sign a return, believe it or not, is a major deal. But another major deal, which I want to talk about, is failing to report all your income. IRS receives 1099s as to how much you made. They get it from your employer, they get it from your banks, they get it from your whatever company you're working with, and so on. And if your tax return doesn't match what IRS says you made, they're going to invite you in for a chat. Say very simple. So you want to make sure that you are matching everything that the IRS says you made. Now, there's another very important thing that I'll bet you've never heard. I'll bet you've never had a guest say this, and yet it's one of the most important things you can do, okay? And those of you who are listening are really going to appreciate what I'm about to tell you. There's a lot of big-ticket items on tax returns that you can claim. For example, if your house is destroyed by flood, we talked about flood before, or earthquake or hurricane or some fast destruction that's not covered by insurance, you can deduct the loss as a casualty loss, which could be a very big-ticket item. If you have large medical expenses, it may have to exceed a threshold, but you can deduct those large medical or large dental. The problem is, if you suddenly take a large big-ticket item, even though it's legally deductible, it's going to cause scrutiny by the IRS, and they're probably going to want to audit you. So how do you avoid that problem? A good example of this, I have a friend of mine who claimed $25,000 of dental expenses in 1 year. Now, that sound a little high to you? Sure.
Was it Joe Biden with the fake teeth?
No. But these are legitimate. But here's the catch. Here's what you got to do. When you have a big-ticket item, you're allowed to attach a schedule itemizing everything that's a big ticket item. You can attach a schedule to that tax return explaining the big ticket item. So let's take an example. Let's assume I had $25,000 of dental. If I simply say $25,000 dental on my tax return, I report that as an itemized deduction, I'm going to hear from the IRS. I will. But if I have attached a schedule, and the schedule says, okay, it involves orthodontia for my three children, periodontal surgery for me, periodontal surgery for my wife, and here's what I spend on each of those five items, chances are an IRS agent's going to look at that and go, oh, this is explained. We don't need to audit him, and that will reduce your chance of audit. So the bottom line is if you have a big-ticket item, always attach a schedule itemizing the big-ticket item and breaking it down.
Now, Sandy, where do you fall on this whole topic of using like a TurboTax type of a deal or going in and sitting down with somebody? I've had friends tell me horror stories of going to some of these like chain tax preparer places, and yeah. They've ended up using the software and they have a better experience. My son, he's 22. He did his own tax return this year using the software. And I had no trouble. I've done my own taxes for many years. I'm a financially trained guy, so that's probably unfair to use me as an example. But which way do you fall on this? Can a person do this on their own or not?
Let me tell you where I fall on this. There's an old saying called garbage in equals garbage out. IRS actually did a study. You can go on the web. You can actually find the study by the IRS. And what they found is that generally people who do their own tax return using TurboTax, Microsoft Money, H&R Block, TaxCut, all these software, have over twice the error rates of those prepared by a professional accountant. Now, here's the point. If you've got over twice the error rate, and the government knows this, what do you think is going to happen? You've just increased your chance of an audit. And not only have you increased your chance of an audit, but who's going to represent you? The box? Can people do this tax return themselves using the software? Yeah, they can. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, especially if you have any kind of complexity. But yeah, you can do your own tax return. I don't recommend it at all, but you can do it. I'm a tax lawyer. I don't even do my own tax return. You know, it's a very stupid thing to do if you have any kind of complexity. Now, what do I mean by any kind of complexity? If you own a home, if you own rental property, if you have a business, any kind of complexity, I would not recommend you do your own tax return. And I feel very strongly about that.
Now, what's going on with all of these Obamacare tax subsidies? My daughter is 24, and she sent me an email this afternoon, which I thought was very, very interesting. She said that she was able to shop on the Internet and find an insurance policy with Obamacare, and because she's still a college student, doesn't have a huge income, she got this subsidy approval from the website that will actually completely pay for her to get this really decent health insurance plan, and that sounded a little bit too good to be true, especially with all the criticism of Obamacare. What about these tax subsidies, and is this an unusual situation for her to have made out so well with this?
Well, it is unusual that she made it out that well. But, you know, the Obamacare subsidy, let me see if I can give you a good analogy. It's sort of like the banks or some of these financial institutions saying, hey, we're going to give you a two-month free deal. Come join us. And then, of course, in 2 months, and everything goes up tremendously. The Obamacare subsidy is a subsidy for the next couple years in order to make it palatable for people to want to go through the Obamacare policies. And the way to get that subsidy is you usually have to go through the exchanges in order to get those credits or the subsidies. The problem is that for the most part, if you take most people I know, the Obamacare without the subsidy is substantially more than what you're paying for private health insurance now. Substantially more. With the subsidy, usually still is more, but it's much, much closer. And by the way, the reason it's substantially more is you're paying for 25 million people who didn't have insurance, not to mention the fact that you're paying for a lot of things that weren't available in insurance, like, for example, there's no lifetime limit and so on. So there is a substantially higher premium. So in order to make it palatable, the government has these subsidies for businesses and for other people based on income that will reduce the physical cost of the premium. The catch is, at some point, those subsidies get eliminated. I think it's a few years, but it is going to be eliminated. And then those premiums are going to go up to their normal level, and everybody is going to realize, wow, we just got taken. And that's kind of what this is. I do believe we needed some kind of health care reform. Whether we should have had this is another story. But that's kind of what's going on. Many employers can get credits, like I hired a guy. We're providing his health insurance. I think the total cost to me is, now he's getting dental too, in fact, is like $180 a month, which is great. But as I said, this stuff, it depends on your income. This stuff will get phased out eventually.
Yeah, it's like the introductory rate on a credit card. And we're going to take some calls here. After the break, we're going to come back and take calls. And the number to dial with your tax question, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316, or you can send the question over by email. But we do go to the callers, so if you want to be first in line, give us a call, 888-287-3316, and the email address, jim@christianmoney.com. Sandy, one question here before we hit our break. Is there a percentage that if you go below that in terms of your marginal tax rate, that the IRS is going to come after you? The reason I ask this is because you will see these books that come out from time to time, or speakers or people that have seminars where they say you can pay 0% in taxes, and they have all of these, I mean, extremely creative ideas, and they've got chapter and verse to show you where they're legal. But one of the things that I've always thought was, well, look, what if I actually did figure out a way to pay no taxes legally? Would I still not get dragged in just because that's just too good of a scenario for me to end up with as a taxpayer? I mean, is there a number by which, as you as being a tax expert, that you say, look, my God, don't go below a 5% marginal rate, or you're just asking for trouble?
You know, I'm going to give you a really clear-cut answer, okay? It depends. How's that for clear-cut?
Okay.
See, I'm a good IRS attorney. I can talk out both sides of my mouth here. The way it works, the way the tax law works, is that if you take, well, you're allowed, you take your income and you subtract certain deductions, like itemized deductions and so on. And if you're, and that gives you, then pay taxable income, you pay a certain amount on that taxable income. If, however, you take too many itemized deductions, or you have too much long-term capital gains at special rates, then there's something that clicks in called the alternative minimum tax, which hits you at around 26 to 28% of your, basically your gross income, and it gets rid of a lot of these deductions, like itemized deductions and so on. So if you do it that way, it's not going to work. It works under a limited extent, and if you do too much, it doesn't work. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is, yes, there is a way to very substantially reduce your taxes. There is a way to get it down, whether you can get it down to, you can theoretically even get it down to zero under this technique. I don't know when you have to have your next break, but we can get into it when you want to talk about it.
Yeah, why don't we save that at the break, and also we'll get into a home business and why
that's exactly
makes a
what
whole lot of
mention.
Sense. Oh, it
you
is. Okay,
it.
Very good. So we're
that's
on the
exactly
same track. And we'll be back with our guest, Sandy Botkin. His books, Achieve Financial Freedom, Big Time, Lower Your Taxes, Big Time, Real Estate Tax Secrets of the Rich. And, you know, he's one of those few guys that has a complicated topic, but you can understand what he says. And that's why we wanted to have him on the show. Your tax questions tonight, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316, or your questions by email to jim@christianmoney.com, jim@christianmoney.com. To our guest, Sandy, this is about a four-minute break, so you can stretch your legs, and we'll be back with more of our discussion with Sandy Botkin right after this. Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. Recently, I did an event in Chicago unveiling a brand new service called Christian Money Plus. It's been years in the making, and I'm super excited to let you know that it is now available. At the centerpiece of this new program is the ability for you to have unlimited access to me personally using the Internet. You'll also receive my 12-page newsletter mailed to your home each and every month. Now, there are tons of other benefits, such as our suite of financial calculators, model portfolios, and much, much more. Right now, I'm offering several bonuses to our new subscribers. Some of these bonuses include a video on how to use the Internet to raise money for your idea or project. This is money you will never have to pay back. There's also a second video on how to save money by dropping cable TV, and I also cover on this video how to get free home phone service for life. Yes, you can drop cable TV and still get hundreds of channels on your television set legally using the internet. All of that, including how to get the free home phone service for life, all of that on your second bonus video. Additional bonus reports include how to opt out of Obamacare, as I did, and save thousands by joining what's called Christian Medical Sharing. Another bonus report shows you step-by-step how to stop Google from spying on you. All of this information is available right now to subscribers of our brand new service, Christian Money Plus. I sure hope you'll consider joining us. All of the money that comes in every month from Christian Money Plus goes to further the mission of our website, ChristianMoney.com. Check it out today. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. Again, that's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. You can subscribe right now and access all of these bonus reports within a matter of just a few seconds. Check it out right now. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to pray for a financial miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems, the biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need, how prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues, how to pray for a financial miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com, how to pray for a financial miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You know, about a year ago, I started getting concerned about the cost of our family's health insurance, literally costing us thousands and thousands of dollars each year, and the cost continued to go up and up and up. And I started doing some research into an alternative called Christian Medical Sharing. And I learned that through a special law, a special provision, Christians are able to opt out of Obamacare and actually get into this alternative to traditional health insurance called Christian Medical Sharing. I decided to go ahead and move into a plan like that, and I'm saving a lot of money. Now, if you'd like to find out more about it, get more of the details to find out if it's for you or not, I've written an article on it. In the article, I give you more details, including I actually mention the organization that I decided to go with. If you'd like to get all of the information on this and find out if it might be for you, check out this website, medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. That's medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. Okay, we are back. My name is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com, and we're with you on Sunday nights live at 9 o'clock, and we can't tell you about it yet, but in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a big announcement about the show, possibly expanding to a couple of hours, possibly going up on the satellite and some other things, and we'll leave it at that, but I will be giving you some more details on that here very, very soon. Our guest tonight, Sandy Botkin. You've probably seen him on all the big TV shows around this time of year, a lot of the radio shows, talking about taxes. His books, Achieve Financial Freedom, Big Time, Lower Your Taxes, Big Time, Real Estate Tax Secrets of the Rich. And we are taking phone calls and questions by email, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316. Email questions, jim@christianmoney.com. I see we have callers. Callers, hold on. We want to just continue with where we left off. And, Sandy, we were talking about starting a small home-based business, which I think makes a lot of sense just separately from the tax benefits. But tell us why that's a good tax move.
Okay. First of all, what most people need to understand is that we really have, besides the alternative minimum tax that I was talking about, we really have two tax systems in this country. And when I say that, I guarantee most listeners are thinking, oh, sure, one for rich and one for poor. And that is not quite true. It's close. There's one to make you rich, and there's one to make you poor. The one to make you poor is the one designed for employees. If you are a working stiff, you're a hardworking employee, number one, you're in the system that's designed to take your wealth because you are taxed on dollar one. If you have any employee business expenses, it's got to exceed a high threshold. If you take too many of them, then you get hit with that alternative minimum tax I was talking about in the prior segment, in which case you can get those things disallowed. However, if you are self-employed and you have a business, oh, that's the one to make you rich. Because there you get to write off everything that an employee gets, plus you get to write off part of your house, your spouse, the equivalent of your kids' education and weddings. I'm not exaggerating, by the way, when I say that. You can set up a pension plan that I promise you makes any government plan look small by comparison. You're taxed on your net income, so you get all your deductions before the government gets one dime to drink. That alternative minimum tax doesn't apply to business deductions. You don't have to exceed a threshold. I mean, the benefits of being in business are enormous. And we talked about before you left, and I want to address an issue that you asked me, and that is how do you get your taxes down to zero? Well, I can't guarantee total zero, especially with the Social Security that's taken out of the paycheck. But if your business that you start, now we're assuming you start a legitimate business. I'm not saying you start a business for the tax avoidance because nobody does that and it won't work. But if you start a legitimate part-time business and that business generates a loss, the government subsidizes you. The government's actually the biggest bookie in North America because they subsidize your business. And the way they subsidize you is you can use that loss against any form of income you have, interest, dividends, wages, rents, pensions, anything. So let's say you make $50,000 at a job. You have a business loss of $10,000. You only pay tax on $40,000. And if the loss exceeds your income, then they subsidize you by being able to carry back all excess losses 2 years and get a refund from the federal and state governments for the last 2 years of taxes that you pay. You actually get a check. Or you can carry it forward 20 years and offset the next 20 years of earnings. So the bottom line is starting a business is the last great tax reduction opportunity in this country. But the catch is, and the government doesn't ask much for it, in order to subsidize you, they ask two things. One, you're a good bet, which means you're trying to make money. You're running your business like a business. And two, you have the right documentation. And if you do that, they will subsidize your business with losses or if you have losses. And you can't beat that. It's like free government funding from the government.
And there used to be a government publication that you could get from the IRS that just listed all of the tax deductions for small business. I think it used to be.
I think you're referring to there's several publications. There's publication 565. There's publication 17. My book is very, very specific on small business deductions and corporate deductions. In my book, Lower Your Taxes Big Time. That has a whole bunch of them.
And here's one for you. Thanks to Google, publication 334.
Correct.
Appears to be a tax guide for small business. But, of course, all of this is going to be in your books, and not just the tax book, but your other book, too, on financial freedom, which it sounds like we're talking about one and the same here, because cutting your taxes is one way to create some additional money to do other things with. Let's go to the phone lines now. If you've got a question, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316. Our guest, Sandy Botkin. Let's say hello to one of our regular callers, Joanne from the St. Paul, Minneapolis area. Joanne, say hello to Sandy Botkin.
Hello, Joanne.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. I make around $50,000 a year, and is it too late to participate in an IRA for this year? And also, how much am I allowed to put in?
It is not too late to participate in an IRA. You can make a contribution this year for last year, and you can make a contribution this year for this year.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Like how much?
The maximum is generally, assuming it depends on whether you're under a qualified plan or not with your boss, but basically the maximum is $5,500 unless you are age 50 or older, in which case then you get an extra $1,000.
Okay, wow. So she could, in theory, put in like $11,000.
Yeah.
If everything works out.
I want to mention one thing that Joanne raised. That's a very, very important point. Most people call me up when I'm on the radio and go, oh, can I contribute to my IRA this year for last year? And the answer is yes, but they miss the point. The point, and this is something why I have a whole chapter on compounding. This is why a good understanding of compound interest is critical. Let's say you put that same $5,500 in your IRA. You do this for 40 years, but you do it at the beginning of the year. You do it in January, not the next year for the previous year, but January. And you compare that with the same $5,500, but you do it at the end of the year in December. Same 40 years, same $5,500. One's done in January, one's done in December. By the end of 40 years, when you're ready to retire, depending on your return, you'll have somewhere between $60,000 and $80,000 more at retirement by doing it in January.
Very, very interesting. Now, here's a question coming in by email, and this is a question I've had for a long time. This is a person, and I'm just going to paraphrase here because this is too long, but they're saying that they have a small home-based business, and they have a car, and they want to put signage all over this car promoting what they're doing in this home-based small business. It looks like some kind of a MLM type of a deal that they're involved in, but they want to do a wrap of advertising all over this car, and then they're saying that their position is going to be that this car is now a moving billboard, and everything having to do with this car is now a tax deduction.
Okay.
They can go to the grocery store, they can drive it wherever, and everything's paid for through the business.
All right. I get that question a lot, and here's your answer, and this is in my book, Lower Your Taxes Big Time. I specifically addressed that question, by the way. And the answer is that putting a big advertisement on your car does not convert whether you have business or personal mileage. All you can deduct is basically the cost of the advertising sign. Whether something is business or personal, it depends on your driving, what you did. Did you go to see a client? Did you go to see a prospect? Did you go to a temporary business stop? A lot of it depends on what you did with the car and not whether there's advertising on the car.
Okay, very good. Now, here, this next question, this is one that my wife and I, we've dealt with this in recent years. You get into a situation where you have an adult child, okay? They're between, let's say, 18 and 22. You're still heavily helping them out. Sometimes you're helping them out well beyond 22, right? But you're still like, you're the guy helping give them a car, and you're paying some of their bills and so forth and so on. But yet they have a little job going, and they want to do their own tax and claim themselves because they're looking at signs like, hey, if I claim myself, I get all this money, but mom and dad are saying, yeah, but if you go on my return, I'm going to get even more than that. And then they sort of make like a side deal, like, look, stay under mom and dad's return, let's work the numbers out, and we'll give you a little bit extra money to help soften the blow. Is that okay to do that? Is that the right way to be thinking about that?
Absolutely okay to do that. It's absolutely okay to do that. You have to meet certain rules. They have to make under a certain income. They have to live with you. You have to provide over half their support. But generally, if they're under age 26, you can claim them as a dependent on your tax return, and then you can simply give them some of that money and to help reimburse them for that. I did the reverse, just so you know. I want to share something with you that I did, and I think if people learn what I do in my life, they can do the same thing. I saved up a lot of money for my kids to go to college, and I put it in their name. I put it in these college savings plans. I put it in their name, so they had a fair amount of money to go to college. Now, the problem was that my daughter didn't want to go to an in-state school because they didn't offer the major that they had. She wanted to go to a school that had a major, that had her major, but it was an out-of-state school. It was Ohio, actually, when I live in Maryland. So what I did was we stopped claiming her as a dependent on my tax return for the prior year. Then when my daughter went to Ohio, she paid all her own tuition. I got a whole chapter on this, by the way, on how to get in-state tuition for an out-of-state kid. She paid all her own expenses. Many schools, not all, but you see, you have to research this, but there are many states that allow children to get in-state tuition, even though they're an out-of-state kid, if they can show they are financially independent of the parents. And to be financially independent, they have to basically, the parent cannot claim it as an exemption. The kid provides proof that they paid for all their living expenses for the year prior to when they're claiming in-state status. They have to change their voter's registration, change their driver's license. And by doing that, in a number of states, they can get in-state tuition, usually starting around the second year.
All right,
that's
now,
what we were able to accomplish.
And that's fantastic information, another good reason to get your book. This next question is about two things that we all probably have and use, okay? Computers and cell phones. So here's the question in a nutshell. They're saying, I have a home-based business in which I use my computer. So they're wanting to know, and they also say that I also have cell phones, and my family is on my plan, and we all use the phones to work in the business, and it's going to be this gentleman's position that all of the family's computers, all of the family's cell phones, and all of the internet connection, monthly bills, cost of the phones, cost of the computers, all of that is now a tax deduction. Is that right, or the fact that maybe he's using some of those cell phones for personal calls or some of the internet is being used to watch movies at night?
How do you say that
this is a business deal or not?
Let's get into those things. There's a lot of questions there. All right, first of all, as far as computers, the government allows you to write off the car. You can actually make an election to write off your computers if you can extend to use it for business. So you'd have to prove that you're using it for business, and it has to be at least 50% or more for business. As long as you can prove that, like if it's in an office, for example, away from the home, or you keep a log on the use of your computer, then you can write off the business use of that computer. Cell phones used in business are generally deductible regardless. You can write off the physical cost of the cell phone. The internet is usually not deductible because there's usually a lot of personal stuff. You watch TV on the internet, so normally internet is not deductible. I guess you can try and keep a log and see what happens, but I think it would be a hard thing to do. And the actual cell phone bill, that depends on whether you're incorporated or not. That's one of the differences if you're incorporated, and I have this in my book as well. If you are a corporation and the corporation's paying the bill, you can deduct the cell phone bill. A self-employed person can also deduct the cell phone bill, but they're going to have to keep a log or get a copy of their bill showing what percentage of the calls were business and what percentage were personal. And they can cross out everything personal from the bill, and the difference is business. If they do some kind of allocation that way, then the self-employed person can also deduct this. So I guess I said a lot of things in one breath here.
Well, with only about 3 minutes left, and we want to save at least a minute or two of that to let you give us websites and the names of your books and all that, but let's get to this last one quickly. Someone wants to ask about Bitcoin. What happens if you put money into Bitcoin and you end up with a lot more money in the end? We told people that a gain is a gain is a gain. So if you put in $10 and end up with $1,000, it doesn't matter if you bought a collectible, a buggy at a garage sale or what it was, it's a gain. Now, is that wrong or not? Is it a gain in Bitcoin?
It depends on what happens with the Bitcoin. If you simply hold it and the thing just appreciates, you don't have to worry about the tax. When you have to worry about the tax is when you get rid of the Bitcoin, if you change it in for something or you sell it. Then you have taxable income to the extent of what you receive over what you paid. So that's the first thing. Second thing is IRS is looking at Bitcoin very, very carefully. I think the former president of Bitcoin either resigned or committed suicide. There's some major scandal that went on here. Bitcoin is a very suspicious kind of thing. Like-kind exchanges, people do exchanges, are fully taxable. Bitcoin is sort of a way of like an alternative currency where you can get sort of the equivalent of an exchange in the hope that the government doesn't find out. And the government is finding out. And there's all kinds of stuff that IRS is looking into this stuff. So if you own Bitcoin, you better keep a watch as to what IRS is doing because they are taking a hard look at this stuff. But the bottom line is it's simply holding the Bitcoin. If it goes up in value, you're not going to pay tax. It's when you exchange it, get rid of it, sell it. That's the point where you pay tax.
Okay, and in our last minute, tell us your website, the books, where people get everything, and how they connect with you.
Great. I have two major books. It's called Lower Your Taxes Big Time, which is designed for anybody in business or thinking of starting a business. And then I have my other book, which is designed for anybody, and that's Achieve Financial Freedom big time. And that one's very broad-based, from asset protection to what mortgages to get to, what to look for in insurance, to all kinds of things, how to get in-state tuition for out-of-state kids, and so on. And that's called the Chief Financial Freedom Big Time. You can get this by going to either any of the bookstores, or you can go to Amazon by going to books.sandybotkin, that's B-O-O-K-S dot sandybotkin with a T, .com, and then you can order either of these books. I also have a great expense tracking website with an integrated mileage tracker, so if you have to keep track of your expenses, this one's a killer. It was rated number one in North America. It's called TaxBot, T-A-X-B-O-T, and between TaxBot, lower your taxes big time, and achieve financial freedom big time, they'll make their life a lot less taxing.
And are you on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
I am on Facebook. I do a daily blog Monday to Friday at www.facebook.com/Sandy Botkin or Lower Your Taxes. I have two different Facebook accounts that I post my blogs on. And Botkin is spelled with a T.
Okay, very good. Sandy Botkin, great information, and we'll definitely have you back again. Thank you very much, sir.
It's my pleasure.
All right, great interview. I love this guy's energy. I love the information, and that's saying a lot. We're talking about the topic of taxes, right? I mean, who can get excited about taxes? But you can get excited about it when you think about how much money you can save. And it really sounds like some good information. I don't have these books because I didn't get them before the show. But my understanding is, from my producer, these books are on the way to me, and I want to get them for my own consumption. So I'm looking really forward to getting these books. And honestly, if they don't show up soon, I'm going to just buy them myself and pay for them, which I do half the time anyway, for the books of the guests that I have on this show. I'm not as organized as I should be, because I probably should be getting every book I want for free within my topic area of this show. But I just don't do that. And in this case, I'm supposed to be getting these two books shortly, and we'll look forward to that and maybe do post a book review over on my blog. All right, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week at 9 p.m. Eastern. If it's 9 o'clock Eastern, it's Jim Paris Live. This is Jim Paris here, as always, to help you make the most of God's money. We'll talk next time.
You've been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit ChristianMoney.com or send an email to jim@ChristianMoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.